So please join me in welcoming Gail Kennedy to hear about earning a living from your writing and never writing for free. So Gail Kennedy is a member of the Wonkalong clan of Southwest New South Wales. She was the Indigenous Issues editor and writer for Streetwise Comics from 1995 to 1998. In 2005, her book of poetry, Koori Girl Goes Shopping, was shortlisted for the David Unicorn Award, and Gail went on to win the award in 2006 with her book Me, Ant-Man and Fleabag. That book was shortlisted for a Victorian Premier's Literary Award and the Deadly Award, and was also commended in the KHL's Rapper Award. Her children's books for the Young Strong Stories were nominated for 2011 Deadly Award for Achievement in Literature. She's had articles and short stories published in publications as diverse as The Australian, Women's Weekly, Reader's Digest, Australian Author, Phoenix Education Review, Australian Writer, The Sydney Morning Herald, and The Edinburgh Review. Good heavens, Gail. And she's also presented at various writers' festivals and NAIDOC events, as well as speaking both nationally and internationally on her experience with polio and disability in general. And she won the Red Room Company Award on a poem to celebrate the Carved Trees exhibition at New South Wales State Library. And I should also say that Gail speaks at schools and she runs writing workshops. She's published 6 new graphic novels with OUP in February 2014, and she's gone on to have work published in Penguin Anthologies, Currency Press Anthology, Aura Nui Anthology, and Suddenly Magazine. Please welcome Gail Kennedy.
Hello everybody, Yamakaka, which is a hello, a greeting in the Nyambo language, which is my language. I'm an elder of the Wongabong clan of the Nyambo speaking nation of New South Wales, and I've been a professional writer since, I guess 2007, because I found myself in a wheelchair and suffering from Cox's polio syndrome, which skipped up around a fairly fairly good career in the public service, and I had to actually say to myself, well, how am I going to make a living now? You know, I can't get up in the morning. And I very foolishly that I would become a writer. But funnily enough, it's worked out for me because I've been willing to be, very adaptable. And a funny thing is, for quite a few years, I never actually told anybody that I was in a wheelchair and that I had a disability whenever I sent things off to publishers. But then when my book, Me, Ant-Man and Fleabag, came out, then I had to actually go and accept the award. And then it became obvious that I was in a wheelchair. But I try very much to not let that interfere with my ability to make a living as a writer. But I've been very well published. I've been published by I've published 11 books with Oxford University Press. I've published a book with the University of Queensland Press. I've published with Currency Press, Penguin, the Edinburgh Review, the Village Voice, various newspapers and magazines. And I will write pamphlets, if that's called them on. I do things like reviews. I review children's books to make sure that there's nothing that's culturally inappropriate in them. And I'm constantly, I'm now really constantly writing, and I'm writing into a television series, so I'm now learning how to screen write, and I find it brilliant. Because I had a background in writing graphic novels, and so telling story with words and dialogues and pictures is an amazing experience and a learning experience. I never say to anyone who asks me or who wants to commission me, whether I never say that I can't do it. when they call me and they say, can you do this, I go, it looks like Anne. Then I put up this wall saying, I've a mild panic attack. I'm learning how to do it. And it's been, it has worked for me. But the frustration that you go through as a person with a disability, in terms of getting invited to, you know, to writers' festivals. I mean, despite a great portfolio of work behind me, I never asked to sit on panels, just as people like Bellstock that aren't invited to sit on panels at the Sydney Writers' Festival, the Melbourne's Writers' Festival, Brisbane Writers' Festival. And I mean, they see me as difficult because I get angry when they don't listen to me and what my needs are, when I can't access page, when I refuse to come up with a measly airfare or a carer to travel with me. And it's just so frustrating, you know, because then you find that you have to say no, and then you get a reputation for not being able to turn up when it's actually not your fault. Because you can't travel alone, you need somebody to be there with you. And that was the wonderful thing about this particular conference, and that was all covered, and it's just unfortunate that I've gotten really sick, and I'm still not really well, but I'm really glad that I can be here today and have a chat with you. I wanted to talk a bit about how writers with disabilities are left out of residencies, for instance. You know, I see people strolling around the grounds of Florence and Rome and Paris, and you go up and enjoy their residencies, but there's nothing there for people in wheelchairs. You know, there's absolutely nothing. Verena, for years, has been accessible, but this year was finally given a grant to build a studio in the grounds. And a path, an accessible path into the main building so that people like me can actually go to Varuna and we can apply for residencies there. But I wonder, a lot of the residencies are, okay, they're held in old buildings, but why on earth can't they find the money to build a studio for us in the grounds of these great residencies in Rome and Florence and Paris. Mm. I mean, I it's frustrating, it's annoying, and I really don't like the politics of envy. But why should we have to sit there envious of people, taking up these residencies? Why can't we freely apply for these residencies, knowing full well that when we get there, our needs will be met? And we get left out, writers get left out a lot in terms of multidisciplinary grant funding, which is where we often find ourselves as writers with disabilities. The thing is that we're up against people who are applying for things like art, art, theatre, how literature is considered in the arts, in terms of funding and funding boards, is that it doesn't jump out at you. An application doesn't jump out at you. It's not immediately rewarding. You know, how do we compete against beautiful paintings, fabulous plays and musicals, the tactile beauty of sculpture, the translucence of a piece of celadon pottery, in-your-face performance art, a book is seen as a throwaway, something for the bargain bin. Its beauty is not immediately apparent. You have to open it, smell it, appreciate the sight of the freshly cracked spine of a book, and then surrender completely to the world that has been created by the writer. There should be an understanding that books are a work of art and are created by artists. And they are all, and writing has been for me a saviour. And I want to be able to be funded properly to continue the work that I do. And there should be more than just the literature board for us to apply to. When we apply to multidisciplinary boards, then we should be given much more of a go when it comes to actually getting funding. And I think funding is perfectly fine. But there's a any kind of disability, and needs to have a carer with them, or not, just somebody to travel with them, somebody to take care of them, and be lifting, so that you're not stressed and overwhelmed by everything. in terms of funding, I just saw, like a woman. I mean, I saw a woman who won a major award in America, the Tony Award. And while she was able to receive her individual award, because she was already backstage, when it came time to actually be on stage with the rest of the cast when they were given the award for the best musical, she actually had to sit in the audience while the rest of the cast were up on stage making their speeches and accepting their awards. And there were two things that really concerned me about that. Is one, and I'm going back, and I'm old, so forgive me, but the old saying, they can put a man on the moon, why could they not, add something there, built a ramp, or, there's all kinds of ways and means of getting her on stage with the rest of the cast. So that, of course, was frustrating and annoying. But the other thing was, where was the solidarity of the cast with their fellow cast member? Why didn't they refuse to go on stage without her? Why didn't they stand down at the bottom of the stage and pull her there and demand that microphones be handed down to them? I mean, I was extremely disappointed that there was no solidarity. And people constantly use the excuse about access, but saying, these are old buildings, blah, blah, blah. But that's not good enough. I mean, I've been to the Louvre in Paris, I've travelled. I know how things can be made accessible in these old buildings that are hundreds of years older than theatres in New York and houses in the Blue Mountains. So, and also there was the a young guy called Dylan Stryker, who apparently won a Logie. And the only reason I thought about the Logies was they actually said, stroke Dylan Stryker. As he said, he sat in the audience and he didn't be around. So he just automatically assumed that he hadn't won. So, he was actually denied all that. But the beautiful anticipation of that winning an award in that apparently turns out that they weren't around, but it was out the back. But why wasn't there one in the front so he could, with the rest of the people, enjoy the thrill of anticipation? These are the things that really, I've been in the same situation. I've been up for awards and there's no ramp, and you're automatically, you're bereft already because you think that there's no way you could possibly find. And I just think that we're overlooked and we're forgotten. And, you have people there, opining about, opining, the measure of a society is how we treat our most marginalised. And I'm thinking, they're right in here that makes them feel good about saying stuff like that. Why don't you actually get out there and do something? When you see something that's inaccessible, if you go to a theatre that's inaccessible, why don't you mention it to people? Why don't you write to the theatre and ask why not? And all very well to make them feel good and feel good thoughts, but that doesn't get us to the theatre. That doesn't get us on the stage. That doesn't get us on the main stages and panels at Writers' Festival. just of me, I guess I'm seen as a bit of a bull sheep when it comes to these things because I'm loud and I get loud, I get angry, and I think that probably it's just difficult to deal with me. But I'm not being difficult, I'm just asking for a fair dose of me and for all my fellow artists with disabilities. I mean, I am an Aboriginal woman, but I don't experience anywhere the kind of discrimination as a female Aboriginal woman that I do as a person with a disability. And access, equity, these are the things that we want. You know, we don't want pity, we don't want to be seen as special for simply getting out of bed in the morning. You know, we don't want to be on television accompanied with swelling music, purple and solemn prose that shows us, you know, as ignoble heroes, we're simply going about our day-to-day lives. We're not actually here to make people feel good. We're here to make them weep and drop coins in puppets. We are not the other. We are just like everyone else. We are normal people whose bodies have been knocked out. Bodies are like that. They're frail. They're easily damaged. Anyone can put their house on TV and return to a wheelchair or using a walking stick. Anyone can leave the house with everything functioning, with all facilities functioning, and return with you. None of us know. And also, we need to stop looking at people as wheelchair bound. We're not. Wheelchairs, our legs are that way of moving around in the world. We are not bound to them. They are freedom for us. Before I had my wheelchair, my life was a total misery because I was trying to live in an able-bodied world and trying to walk and knocking myself out with the effort. I became ill, I became depressed, and for the first time in my life, considered suicide. And this is not the way that we should be living. And I came across a man who's just recently died, Professor Peace. And he actually said something that resonated with me. He said, we shouldn't be looking at better ways for people to die. We should be looking at better ways for people to live. And this is taking what's happening. And our art, it is one of the ways that many of us can make a living that we can participate in. And we need to be more than, and we need, and our art needs to be seen not as some kind of therapy. We need to be paid for our art. I made a decision quite a few years ago. It didn't matter whether it was $50 or a voucher. It was very, very important for me that we received that people with disabilities are respected as professionals, are respected as artists, and are paid. Well, are paid for our work. I've said many times, people said, well, this gives you exposure. And I look at them, I don't need exposure, I deserve it. And this is how I made my living, this is how many of us make our living. And we need to be seen as working artists, working artists with something to offer people, you know, something beautiful, something different. And what you could gain from us is an amazing topic. What we have to give, you know, we are a whole bunch of us out there with disability, we're unexpected, and each of us is an opportunity. if we're not constantly left out of the narrative. And I sincerely hope that we have more things like this, and I sincerely hope that there are able-bodied people out there. If there are able-bodied people out there who have any influence in the program of writers' festivals, of arts festivals, then advocate to have us on there. Advocate for money to be put aside so that people with disabilities can bring carers with them. And I see things like the Festival of Dangerous Ideas. How about, dangerous ideas? How about the idea of treating people with disabilities as human beings? How about treating us the same as people with disabilities? How about making society accessible to us and listening to us? Don't speak up with us. Speak around us. Speak to us. Don't speak to carers. And listen. Wait for answers. It can't take long for us to get our answers. But wait for them. Listen to them and act upon them. And it can only benefit society. It can only benefit society. We have got to take us out there in the world. And I should look forward to the day when it isn't us. But us as people and as artists. So I don't completely off board about what I was going to speak about, but a bit like that is possible.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you so much, Gail, for joining us. That was wonderful to hear you speak. I think the thing that came through the most about everything that Gail was saying was about advocacy. So much about what you spoke about was advocating for literature, the importance of literature as an art form, about advocating for access and inclusion in things like festival main stages. And the importance of solidarity of non-disabled artists with disabled artists. I love Gail's attitude that if anyone asks her to do anything in any art form, she doesn't say that she can't do it. She takes up the challenge and will learn how to be a fabulous screenwriter and will write graphic novels, which I suppose is something that was reflected in what Kate was saying about not being humble and trusting in your abilities. Yeah. So join me in thanking Gail, who is fabulous.